Dynasty Radio, 1382.
Ah, Uncle Jaseneb, life, liberty, prosperity, yet another decree stolen from you and me. The ancestors of the Nile Valley left us other messages too, like, let food be your medicine, and let your medicine be food.
Why is food and drugs under the same administration? They putting drugs in the food to keep money accumulating now. They like to call it additives and preservatives, slowly killing everybody that purchases it. Can you pronounce what's on the back of the label? Then that shit we need to keep off our dinner table now. The food is what's fueling these diseases, paying rich doctors all these medical fees, but they never cure you, they just keep you in need, cut you open for surgery and let your pockets bleed. See, we got away from what we used to eat. We forgot we were kidnapped and forced to eat meat. We ate from the earth, so we communicated with it. We cut the conversation, now check the situation. See, blacks the leaders in heart disease, cancer. We give them money like pills is the answer. Damn, I'd be wrong if I didn't pass the info. Hormones in the food got you thinking like a nympho. Wonder why all these young girls so thick, like a baseball player. Steroids is it. They got it in the vegetables, the fruit, the meat, and all the fast food they be selling in the street. It's a war going on, and our diet must reflect it. We all got the power, we just gotta direct it. Neglect it, never. Refer to the metal nature that them whole tests the father of medicine.
Greetings, family. Thanks for joining us again. This is Kenya Jones, one half of your host for Food for Medicine, and I'm going to be bringing my sister in right now, Dr. Afibi Adiro. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Peace, everyone. Peace, sis.
Peace, peace. Now, for those of you who are just joining us, you're in for a treat, of course, because my sister gets it in every week. And for those of you, we weren't on the last couple of weeks, but there is a host of archives. We're going into our second year with Food for Medicine, so we have a plethora of. I know, it's like that quick. It's like time has just flown. Wow, this is like what February, March, April, and in like 3 months is going to be our second year anniversary. So we will have a host of different shows and topics that you guys can check out anytime we are on. I know you missed us. But we are back. Now, for those of you who want to check us out, we do have a website. I'm going to go ahead and give you that, www.dynastynetwork.net. You can check us out there. We do have a host of other archives from old past shows that we used to do. It's never too late to get information. Now, sis, if you can give them your website, because you do have a website as well for your practice, if you can give that to the family.
Yes. So for those of you who are new to the Dynasty family, my name is Dr. Phoebe Adiro. I'm a naturopathic doctor, and that means that I practice general practice medicine, but I specialize in using holistic therapies for the body, acupuncture, diet, nutrition, herbs, anything that helps nourish the body naturally and that will help strengthen the body's own self-healing power. And I do have a website. My website is called Nkingu, which is the name of my practice. N as in nighttime, apostrophe K-I-N-G-U, Nkingu Health. And you can Google that, and it'll usually pop up. My page will pop up on Facebook. And then if you go to Ask Dr. Adiro, so A-S as in safflower, K-D as in diamond, R, A-D-I-R-O, Ask Dr. Adiro, .weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y, .com. That's my website, and you can find all the list of my services. You can contact me if you want an appointment. I have a free 10-minute consultation that I offer just so that you can tell me what's going on with you. So definitely take advantage of that. So
Right. So for those of you, like Sis said, if you're not familiar with us, we are here every Friday, 3 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And if you're not familiar with me, I am Kenya Jones, and I am an aspiring herbalist. I'm always trying to find new ways to heal the body naturally instead of us having to use all these pills and things that's prescribed by these so-called healers or doctors. So with that being said, there's a topic. The topic for today, you're going to be talking about healthy grains. I know there's a lot of, like, gluten diets and things of that sort that I know my mom was telling me about. I guess it's, you know, she was telling me a couple of years ago, you know, she was like, you know, you heard about the wheat, you know, and this is probably, you know, this gluten and all this. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know much about it too much then. It was maybe about 3 years ago. And so now it's just like this craze, like a lot of people are like allergic to this stuff and have a reaction to the gluten, to these certain grains and things. And so I'm ready to get some information. I know everyone else that's listening is ready to receive some good information. I always say, always have your pen and your pad ready so you can, you know, write down this information. You can pass it along. So I'm going to go ahead and let sis get into the topic of today. And also as far as, you know, what kind of prompted you, you know, to talk about this in particular.
Right. So, yeah, so like always, I'm just prompted by patients, by interactions I have, or even, you know, sometimes I'll just be inspired because I might be doing my own research. But this time is because, again, patients, people ask me because they're, we're all learning. We're all trying to, we're on this healing journey together from wherever point we started. So people are just trying to get information, and they ask me. So I thought, you know what, since I pretty much tell people the same thing each time they ask me. Depending on their case, you know, I might have to tell them something different, like which grains are best for them or which are not for their particular condition. But I wanted to offer this as a way to kind of dispel some of the misinformation and then also inform, you know, some people that maybe don't know as much about the different grains that are out there. So there are so many different types of grains. You're not just limited to wheat. You know, oats and, you know, some of the really really common grains that we're used to. There's, like, so many. And then there are many that we use or that our ancestors used, you know, way back in the day that we don't even utilize anymore, but they're actually some of the most helpful grains that we could be adding to our diet. So I wanted to – so that's the reason that I wanted to do it, was just to kind of – help people maneuver through the confusion so they can make better educated choices with their diet. So and then so I'm just gonna get right into it because like always I have like a long list of things I want to cover and I always get off of my list. I always talk about extra stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm ready too. So yeah, everybody.
And I know everybody else out there. Y'all ready too, right?
Yep, I know they're ready. Let's get into it.
Right, I'm about to see that.
All right. So like I was touching on, you know, the traditional lands of our ancestors, and I talked about this in other shows too, we come from a land that is very rich, that not was, but is very rich in vegetation. A lot of people forget that, you know, Africa is not a place of, it's not really and truly in its essence a place where people are, you know, poor as far as like the resources of the land. You know, if we look, the only reason that we look like we're poor in any environment that we're in is when we deviate from what's naturally ours. But when you look at the land that we come from, even throughout the diaspora, we come from really rich, rich lands, rich in resources, especially in vegetation. So agricultural living, it was very important to the life of African people. And was even more important when it came to the dietary culture of our people. We consumed a diet that was rich in vegetables, fruits, nuts, and, of course, grasses, which the grains being the seeds of those grasses, that's where that came from. So we were eating these grains, and we were using them in many different ways. You know, we used them not only for, you know, making clothes and shelter and paper and things like that, but we also put them in a lot of our food. We made, you know, rice dishes. You know, we have things like the cornmeals, making the bread out of cornmeal, you know, injera, kenke, fermented bread flours, or I want to say bread doughs, sweetbreads, cereals, porridges, you name it. All across the diaspora, we've been using grains for thousands and thousands of years. And we've taught the world pretty much how to use these grains as well. And they've taken our example and they've created their own variations of African dishes or African grain dishes, you know, that we can still see today. But today, like I said, there's a lot of information out there, both beneficial and controversial about grains. And I've heard it all. I've experienced it all through my own healing journey because, you know, I had my own issues with the information I was getting about grains when I was first coming into consciousness about my having a more mindful diet. And all this information can leave many people confused as to whether or not the grains are even helpful, you know, even helpful in general. So I want to shed some light today I have a list of grains that I feel everybody should know about. Most people know about, others people may not have heard of or tried. So I just want to give that knowledge through this kind of going through each grain and talking about the nutritional benefits, talking about the therapeutic benefits, and, you know, why this would be good for a certain population or another. And this, all of, like I said, helps you to make more educated decisions when you're making your choices so you can have the most healthful, nutrient-dense diet as possible. Because like we say, for your food to be a medicine, so this is one of the best ways to make your food your medicine is to be educated about what it is. Well, the first thing I want to talk about is whole grains versus refined. So most people know by now that whole grains are superior to refined grain products any day of the week, of course. Whole grains, of course, consist of the whole unadulterated plant. You know, it's retaining its nutrients. It hasn't been stripped of anything. While on the other hand, refined grains go through a whole rigmarole of manufacturing processes that basically strip most of the beneficial plant matter from the seed or from the actual grain. And this leaves us with less nutrients. It leaves us with less fiber, empty calories, and due to the presence of only the simple carbohydrate of the endosperm is what we get once we strip the plant and now we have white rice or now we have white flour. You know, if you have any white flours, for the most part, that is just the endosperm or the very inner part of that seed grain with the hull removed, the bran removed, the germ removed, all of that. And now you're just left with that proteinaceous center at the center of the seed, and all that is just simple carbohydrate. And then what we should know by now is that abundance of simple carbohydrates without the fiber to check its metabolism in our system, it wreaks havoc in the body. It spikes the blood sugar. It acidifies the body, it induces inflammation, and it dehydrates us because of all of the biological processes that have to go on in order for us to properly neutralize all of that that concentrated sugar and all of the other things that are being released into the blood system from that refined grain product. It is for this reason that we should be so conscious about consuming whole grain products, and we need to do this. The way that we do that, that being conscious of consuming more whole grains, is by either making our own food, which is the best and most optimal way to make sure you're doing that, because you'll know everything that you're putting into it. You'll know what ingredients you're using. You'll know the quality of the ingredients. And the next way that you can do that is by supporting local food producers with integrity who adhere to making whole grain or making grain products like breads and pastries and pastas or whatever using whole grains. And then if you do go to like a bigger chain grocery store and you buy your grain products, buy those products from the stores that contain those same ingredients of integrity. But make sure that you read labels. Don't just read the front of the package, because the front of the package tells you lies, 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 lies. That's advertising. That's something to get your attention. Most, I can say at most of the grocery stores, like, you know, I don't even want to name them. I don't even want to, like, say their names. But you know what I'm talking about. You go into a lot of these chain grocery stores. They're not necessarily a health food store. They're not necessarily health conscious at all. They're just a regular grocery store, you know, for the community. And they carry several different kinds of breads and pastas and, you know, you name it, flours and things like that. And they might say, oh, this is whole grain, or this is a 7-grain. This is the, you know, they'll try to lead you on and say that and play on the fact that you're trying to shift into a healthier lifestyle. But if you look at the back and you actually read the ingredients, not the nutrition label, y'all. Nutrition label tells you lies, too. Read the ingredients, the small print that's usually under the nutrition label or in some other crazy part of the package that is not as convenient to read. And read those ingredients, because that's usually where they will tell you what's actually in that bread product. And I want to say 80% of the time, maybe even 90% of the time, When you pick up, say, for example, I'll just give one example, like Nature's Own. My family used to buy Nature's Own when we were trying to be more conscious. This is when I was living at home. I was, like, in high school, maybe when I was in college. And my mom was trying to get us into eating healthier. You know, she was trying to get healthier, you know, because we have diabetes in our family. We have cardiovascular disease, you know, people dying and all kinds of stuff like that, people getting sick. So we're trying to be healthier. We're trying to take the steps. And she used to start buying Nature's Own whole grain breads, and, like, I think we had, like, oat bread and stuff. And we were like, okay, cool, it's brown, it's good. All right, so we know it's whole grain. It's not white bread. But when I got more conscious, you know, I was moving on in my healing journey, and I became more conscious about those things, especially about reading labels of the ingredients. I read the ingredients on the Nature's Own bread, and, like, the first ingredient was wheat, like just wheat, not whole grain wheat, but wheat. And it also had sugar in it and, oh, my gosh, like dye and all these different preservatives and things. So you just have to – so after that, I was like, wow, this bread isn't as great as I thought it was. It's good. I mean, I didn't feel like I was making such a big transition from eating white bread to brown, or it really was just brown bread. It wasn't really a whole grain bread. But it just opened my eyes to the fact that these people don't care. They just want to make a buck. They're not really serving you anything better than what, you know, the white bread was, or the other product that was had the white flour in it. So you just have to be really conscious about that and read the ingredient labels so that you can make so that you can know exactly what's in that product. And then even call the companies. I have some elder who will actually call the companies, like, okay, how do you make this bread? How do you, you know, make this wheat product or this grain product, whatever it is, so that they really have a knowledge base of the foods that they're consuming, because that's your money, that's your body. Make sure you got all the information. Now, with that being said, let's get into the list of the ancient grains. The ancient grains, as well as, like, maybe not so ancient. I'm going to talk about wheat as well. So as far as wheat, the controversy behind wheat is this. So wheat has been tampered with just, you know, for making a long story short. And most people understand that by now. Most people have seen all documentaries, or they've heard, they've read articles. Wheat is being messed with really bad, really badly. It's been hybridized. It's been genetically modified, and to the point that it's very far from that mother grain that existed in the ancient world. And this deviation from that natural strain, that mother strain of wheat, it makes it to where the wheat grain, for a lot of people, is unrecognizable to the body as a natural food product. Thus, the body views wheat proteins when ingested as a pathogen. So because of this tampering with nature, this genetic modification of the wheat genome, the and I should say the incorporation of a lot of wheat products in many of the food items that we eat daily. You can find wheat gluten, wheat bran, wheat starch, wheat. They're putting wheat in stuff that you maybe don't know that they're putting wheat in, you see. So the fact that, you know, it's been genetically altered, it's in a lot of our food products, this has caused many people to develop allergies to wheat that create a host of health problems. Everything from gas, bloating, all the way to autoimmune disease, hyperactivity, autism, asthma, all of that can be caused by food allergies, with wheat being one of those top food allergens that create those problems in people. Now, the wheat gluten here is the culprit when it comes to people reacting to this grain. And gluten is essentially a protein in wheat that creates the protein matrix, which allows wheat grains, when they are ground and have water to it, to create a protein matrix that makes a glue-like substance. Hence the name gluten. It acts like glue. So when you add water to wheat flour, you see that it gets gloopy and glue-like. And I mean, I know when I was in kindergarten, we used to make glue with wheat and flour, or wheat flour and water. I don't know. I'm sure other people did it. You can make a damn paper mache with wheat flour. So that should tell you a lot about what it is doing inside of the body when you are consuming such a thing. Now, also, the wheat gluten is what allows dough to rise. So it allows it to make – it's what's happening when you rise bread in the oven and with yeast and everything. It's actually making like a bubble, and the bubble stays, you know, in that shape as the bread cooks. Then it makes a little crust. Gluten allows all that to happen. So gluten is good on one end because it makes this really yummy, tasty bread, but on the other hand, it just wreaks all this havoc in the body that is not great, and I don't really think it's worth it, honestly. For this reason, like my sister said at the beginning, there's this gluten-free movement, you know, that has been going on, and it's been on the rise as people seek out non-glutenous grains to substitute for these wheat. With this being a good move and all, all hope is not lost for wheat. The good news for people who are wheat lovers is that there are still some ancient and heirloom varieties of wheat available that people can use instead of the conventional wheat flours. And these include grains like spelt, kamut, farro, and organic wheat berries that you use and, you know, that you ground yourself or sprout and things like that and make your own breads. Sometimes you can get away with that. But for the most part, the more ancient heirloom varieties like spelt, kamut, they are going to be a better choice for people who are really sensitive to wheat gluten in and of itself. Now, let's talk about spelt. Spelt is actually one of the first grains that I was introduced to as part of a wheat-free diet. Actually, going gluten-free, wheat-free was actually one of my first transitions out of the diet that I was eating before I was conscious at all about diet. When I was just eating the same kind of diet that most people in my community were eating, my folks are from South Carolina. We was eating, you know, traditional African in America Southern food. So that's what we were eating. And as I was making my transition into healthfulness, I started getting rid of the wheat first. And spelt was one of the first grains that I learned about, along with kamut and amaranth and teff. And that was actually through Dr. Sabi. When I started learning about Dr. Sabi, I started looking at grains that he recommended, and spelt was one of those ones that I actually had available to me in the store where I was at the time. This is when I was in Texas. So spelt is an ancient grain that was commonly eaten in ancient African societies and throughout the world. If you research like ancient Nubian diets, ancient West African, East African, South everybody has some kind of spell, like a variety of spell. You can find it everywhere. And while it's part of the wheat family, there are a lot of people with wheat intolerances who are actually able to eat spelt because it has not been so hybridized and so genetically modified. Really, they're not messing with spelt, to my knowledge. From the last time I checked, spelt was not being tampered with the way that, you know, conventional wheat is. So for that reason, people who do have wheat intolerances are able to eat spelt because it's pretty close to the original strain that people were eating back in those times of our ancestors. Now, spelt nutritionally is awesome. A single serving of spelt, and single servings, I like to say, are usually about a cup, a little less maybe than a cup. I like to get real kind of rough measuring. I'm all for the rough measuring and the natural measuring. I like to say a serving of anything is how much you can hold in both your hands cupped together like you are trying to hold water in both of your hands. That's how much a serving would be. So don't open your hands up all big and be greedy. Cup your hands together like you're trying to hold water in your hands. And that's how much a serving would be for you. So about a serving of spelt is, you know, has about 5 grams of fiber. I want to say more than that. For the research that I saw, approximately 5 grams was what a lot of people say. But I want to say if you get, like, really good quality spelt, and depending on how much a serving is for you, you can get more than 5 grams of fiber. And then 6 grams of protein was what most nutrition analysis of spelt say that you get per serving. But remember, you don't get protein from anything. Plants give you amino acids. So the amino acid content of spelt, of a serving of spelt, will actually allow you to create 6 grams or more of protein, depending on your how healthy your metabolism is, of those amino acids. And spelt also provides 14% of the daily recommended value of magnesium that you need. That includes the zinc that you need as well. It includes about 25% of the iron you need as well, or more. I want to say I've seen analysis say 30% as well. Spelt in its whole form, because if you've seen spelt in the whole form, it's pretty large grain, and it can actually be used in the place of rice and or pasta. You can also use spelt as an oatmeal alternative that makes a great whole grain cereal. You can also buy spelt flour to use for baking, and you can use it in muffins, waffles, pancakes, breads, anything that you would use wheat flour for, you can use spelt flour for. And what's great about spelt is that it's not that the wheat flour, but it has its own protein, like a gluten, but it's not gluten. It has its own protein substance that makes it that kind of gluey, slimy texture that you need in order to hold together a dough and for a bread to rise. So you can use spelt instead of wheat in baking dishes, and it come out just fine. And I think it tastes better. I think it has like an earthier, a fuller flavor than white flour. So definitely try spelt out. It's excellent. I love it. And some places actually use spelt. Sometimes they actually have spelt bread already made. Just make sure you're reading the ingredients and you're not getting anything else crazy in there that you don't want. I've also seen spelt pastas and spelt crackers. They have spelt, what else do they have? There's spelt, you can buy spelt products basically the same way you can buy wheat products in really good health food stores that offer it. Buns, muffins, you can get everything in spelt. And I know because I've looked for all these things when I was going through my wheat-free journey as well. Now, the next grain I want to talk about is kamut. Kamut is like my favorite grain, like today. I use kamut now all the time. I sprout it. I ferment it. I do all kinds of things with kamut. Now, kamut is a form of is a grain. And it's believed to have been one of the first grains to grow in Kemet or ancient Egypt, and also in Asia, especially southern Asia. Kamut is 2 to 3 times the size of common wheat, so it looks like a huge wheat grain, and it has like 65% more amino acid content than wheat. So it's like wheat on 20. So you thought wheat might have had some nutritional value before, you ain't heard nothing if you ain't heard about kamut. So kamut is also high in essential fatty acids, which is one of the reasons I love kamut, is because it does contain these essential fatty acids. So remember, omega-3s, you know, you make sure that you have a good ratio or a balanced ratio of your omega-3 fatty acids to your 6s and 9s. Because in today's society, especially in American society, we have too much omega-6 oils, which are those pro-inflammatory oils that create inflammation, that create pain, and weakened immune system, and all these things that create illness in us. So getting essential fatty acids that are on the more anti-inflammatory side, which are in grains like kamut as well as nuts and seeds, can help with these ailments and making our food more like our medicine. We can also help, kamut can also help the cardiovascular system a great deal because of these essential fatty acids and the nutrients in it that I'll talk about in just a second. It's been shown to lower blood pressure or to help with lowering blood pressure as a part of a healthful diet. It's been shown to help with lowering cholesterol, lowering the bad cholesterol, the LDL, and raising the good cholesterol, which is HDL. And it's just been like a really, like one of those really heart, what they call heart healthy, but I like to call those cardiovascular nourishing foods. Kamut is particularly a great source of B vitamins. It's very rich in all of them: thiamine, niacin, folate, riboflavin, B6, you name it. It has all those great, great metabolism nourishing B vitamins. Also, it's a very good source of vitamin E as well. Vitamin E, remember, is that fat-soluble vitamin. It is also an antioxidant that we need in the body in order to create it helps with scavenging for free radicals, and it also plays a part in many of our metabolism processes. So you need vitamin E, and vitamin E is also very anti-inflammatory as well. Kamut also contains phosphorus, magnesium, zinc, complex carbohydrates that, instead of it being the simple carbohydrates like in, white flour or white wheat, kamut has complex carbohydrates in the form of fibers that help the simple sugars in it to not break down so quickly in the bloodstream, and it leads to a slower rise in blood sugar or a more even rise in blood sugar than it just being spiked up. And kamut, it can actually be prepared similar to beans, like similar to dried beans. If you get the whole dry kamut grains, you can soak them for several hours before you cook them. You can cook them whole, like I said, and use it as a replacement for rice because they are a large grain. You can make stir fries with them, pilafs. They just make a really great alternative to a lot of the grain products that you would use things like rice and wheat flour for. Oh, that reminds me. Speaking of the flour, you can also buy kamut flour in pretty reputable and health food stores that have a lot of variety. I think you can even buy kamut in non-health food stores now. Some stores might actually carry them. Just look around. If they have, like, a healthy section, like some stores might have that little health and wellness section or whole body section or whatever, see if it has kamut flour. But you can use kamut flour in replacement of wheat flour for baking and other things you would use flour for. Kamut might need to be combined with something like a spelt flour so that it can have the rising capabilities that you would want for a wheat flour alternative. So just make sure that you read your recipe and you can research on the things you need to do to make kamut, do what you need to do to make kamut usable for you and your recipes, because as many people know, gluten-free baking, wheat-free baking can sometimes get a little tricky when you're transitioning, and some stuff comes out better than others. I know I've made a few gluten-free things and wheat-free things in the beginning, and it was like, you know, either it was hard as a brick or it was really dense or, you know, it didn't rise up the way I needed it to, or, you know, you just kind of have to make sure you know all the substitutions you need to make. Sometimes you need to buy, you know, like a buy a flour or get a flour and mix with it that will help it to rise. So just do your homework for your gluten-free and wheat-free baking and flour uses. All right, so the next grain I want to talk about in the wheat family is farro. Farro, also referred to as emmer, is a wheat grain that was one of the first domesticated crops in ancient societies, like in ancient Kemet, for example. So this is one of the first grains that was, you know, kind of monocropped, and they started using farming practices to create a strain of the wheat that was not that wouldn't necessarily occur in nature over and over again, because they were trying to make something that was more desirable as far as what people wanted. So this was the first one that was domesticated. And farro, even though it's still a wheat, this is more closely related to the white wheat that we know. But it's still high in fiber. You can get about 5 grams of fiber per serving. 6 grams of protein per serving, and it provides 20% of your daily needs of most of your B vitamins and 50% of your daily needs of magnesium as well as zinc. Farro is commonly used as a whole grain in soups and pastas. So, again, not in the flour form but in the whole grain form, because it's a little larger grain. That can be, you know, that can add kind of a different texture to soups that you want. There are also pastas made out of farro, risotto, different salad dishes can contain the cooked grains in it. It can also be used to make bread and baked goods with the flour. So you can find farro in other and health food stores as well. Some regular grocery stores might carry it. Just look out for that name. It's F-A-R-R-O, farro. Bulgur, I want to talk about bulgur too. Bulgur is a great alternative to rice or couscous if you don't like to eat those, or if you want to change. It's often used in soups as well, just like the farro and salads. And it's bulgur actually comes from red wheat. They make it from red wheat, and sometimes they do make it from, like, the white wheat as well. But for the most time, I think it comes from the red wheat. Bulgur is very high in fiber. It has about 18 grams per serving, which is great. It's also rich in manganese, which is an essential mineral that you need. It also contains a good amount of B vitamins, especially niacin and B6. And niacin is great for the cardiovascular system. B6 is great for the nervous system, and it helps with dreaming and recalling dreams. So if you notice that you have a problem with recalling dreams or dreaming at all, like you feel like you don't dream, then B6 might be a vitamin you're deficient in, or a mineral that you're deficient in. Bulgur contains about 14% of the iron that you need each day. It has an array of trace minerals, too many for me to actually list off, but it's a lot. It's very mineral rich. This wheat variety is very quick to cook. It's easy to cook, too. I actually do not eat bulgur that much, but I have a lot of friends that do, and they love it because it cooks so easy, and you can, you know, stir-fry it, and it browns up nice. You can put it in with veggies, and, you know, it takes on the flavor of the spices really well and seasonings. So it makes a really great stir-fry that I've tried before, and it's really great. You can also blend it. I've seen people blend it with, like, toasted nuts and, like, walnuts, pine nuts, pecans. You know, you can put it in, you can make, like, cereals out of it. Kids like it. And you can also try mixing the bulgur. Like, say you cook it and then you have some left over that you put in the fridge. You can blend it with, or not blend it, you can mix it with, like, quinoa and, you know, like another whole grain wheat berry, like a kamut or something like that. And you can, like, stir fry that together and make, like, a pilaf out of, like, a whole grain mix like that. And that's really good. So bulgur is a great versatile grain to use for many dishes. And it's pretty nutrient-packed. Now, that's all of the wheat grains that I want to talk about. So the wheat grains are, I'll just list them off again, spelt, kamut, farro, F-A-R-R-O, bulgur. Those are the three wheat grains that I talked about. And because these are still wheat products and wheat is being heavily hybridized and GMO, like I said, or genetically modified, buy these products organic and with a non-GMO label as much as possible. Kamut and spelt, you may be able to get away with buying those non-organic or non-GMO, without those labels on it, because for the most part, they're not messing with kamut so much. Kamut is like an heirloom grain that is pretty protected, and spelt, for the most part, I believe they're not messing with at this point. So you don't have to worry about it as much. But in regards to the other grains, the farro and the bulgur, and any other wheat products, wheat berries, and all these things that you buy that are not spelt or kamut, do your best to purchase those products organic and non-GMO to avoid, you know, eating those conventional type grains, wheat grains. So now I want to get into the non-wheat grains. So all these grains that I'm going to talk about next are not related to wheat. They are their own species of grasses, and they don't contain gluten. So these are good alternative grain choice for people who are looking to avoid gluten, avoid wheat, and are sensitive to the first group of grains that I mentioned. So the first grain that I want to talk about is another one of my favorites, and that's teff. Teff is the world's smallest grain, as a matter of fact. It is made, or it comes from the seed of an Ethiopian grass, and it's made up mostly of bran and germ, which is like the whole, the outside of the grain. So teff is gluten-free, and it's very, very, very nutrient-dense. I love teff for its nutrient quality. It's a small grain, but it packs a big punch as far as nutrition. And it contains really high-quality, bioavailable, easy-to-digest carbohydrates. It has a lot of protein, or not protein, but amino acids, so you can make a good deal of protein from it. Basically, a serving of teff or a teff product, like a bread or something like that, can give you about 26 grams of protein from the amino acids that it contains in it. It also has an abundance of minerals like your phosphorus, your iron, has sulfur, manganese, magnesium. It has silica. It has so many minerals and trace minerals that you need in it, and an abundance of fiber. It's very fibrous, great for the cardiovascular system and the digestive system and elimination system because of its fiber content. It's chock full of B vitamins. Most grains have a lot of B vitamins in them, but teff is one of those ones that is very rich in B vitamins. Uncooked teff flour can be used in baking cakes, breads, muffins, pretty much anything that you will add a flour to. And you can also use it if you want to, like, garnish breads and things like that with, like, you know, if you would use, like, poppy seeds or you would use, like, nuts and seeds and stuff. You can use grains of teff, whole grains of uncooked teff for that. Now, be cautious. Oh, well, not cautious, but just be conscious about teff being gluten-free. It has no it does not have any kind of protein matrix that will form to help you make a doughy batter. So you can't make a dough with teff by itself because it won't form into a dough. It doesn't have gluten. So you have to add teff to a glutinous dough if you want to make a dough, if you're looking to use teff in a dough. So I would add teff if I wanted to make, say, like a cake, and you wanted the cake to rise and be fluffy. Make sure that the majority of the flour is going to be something like spelt, you know, or another like a wheat that is organic and non-GMO, or you buy like a mix, like a gluten-free flour mix that is all-purpose that you can use for baking that has teff, but it has other things in it, like, you know, xanthan gum or guar gum, has baking soda and things like that in there so that it can rise, because teff will not rise on its own, which is one of the reasons that in traditional preparations with teff, for example, injera, which is used, which is a bread product made with teff in Ethiopia, the batter that's made with the teff flour is fermented. So they mix the flour, the teff flour, with water, and then they set it outside so that the natural yeast and bacteria from the environment inoculate the batter and then ferment it, and, you know, causes those little bubbles to form because of the probiotics inside. And that allows the teff to rise, but it doesn't rise the way that you would, you know, think a, you know, a like a cake would rise. It still makes a pretty flat bread. So just make sure that when you're baking with it, you add the necessary things you need to in order for it to turn out how you want. But if you're going to make injera with teff, that's perfect. You know, injera is, you know, what is usually made with teff. And it's a great, easily digestible, probiotic-rich, and gluten-free bread that can be eaten with meals. For anybody that's been to an Ethiopian restaurant and has actually eaten their food with the injera, they know what I'm talking about. But you can use injera, which is made from teff, to eat your food with. Like, say you have a soup, if you have, stews or some kind of, like, more soupy, or like a, what is it, more like a porridge type thing that you're eating, or like lentils and greens and things like that, you can eat it with your injera. You know, make your own gluten-free bread and go to town. So injera is one of my favorite breads. I eat a lot of raw food, but when I do eat cooked food, Ethiopian food is like one of those things that I must have, and injera I got to have with my Ethiopian food. So let's see what else I have on here. Oh, corn. Organic, non-GMO corn. Corn is a great gluten-free, complex, carbohydrate-rich food, and that will actually help you to get your amino acid requirements in for the day. Believe it or not, you can actually get more protein made from corn than if you ate a large egg, because it has way more amino acids in corn than in an egg. So, you know, for those of you who think you're getting all this protein from eggs, yeah, you're getting some protein, but you're getting it secondhand for one, and you're not getting it in the most optimal way for two. A better way to get it is by eating really amino acid-rich plants like corn, and then you're going to get your protein firsthand instead of secondhand through an animal. Now, you can use organic corn flour as a great alternative flour to make or buy in the form of breads and pastas, because, again, it's best if you make your own food. But, you know, if you buy your own pasta and breads from like a health food store, just make sure you're reading the ingredients and, you know, it doesn't have all this other crazy stuff in it. But you can absolutely use corn flour to make your own breads and pastas, but they do have them available already made up for you. Now, a single serving of corn, about a cup, or like I said, your hands cup together like you're trying to hold water, is about a serving for each individual. It provides about 6% of the recommended daily amount of beta carotenes, which you can make into vitamin A, It contains about 10% of the daily amount of vitamin C that you need for the day. So, again, as a part of a well-rounded and nutrient-dense diet, it would be absolutely fabulous for you to eat or to add corn flour that is organic and non-GMO to your foods. Organic stone-ground organic whole grain cornmeal is the healthiest choice. It supplies good amounts of iron and B vitamins, zinc, phosphorus, magnesium, manganese. It has all those fabulous arrays of nutrients that you need. And you can serve up cornmeal or corn any way you like. It's very versatile. You can bake it, boil it, grill it. Polenta is really popular, especially out here in Arizona. A lot of people make polenta as a side dish or a main dish. You know, you can, make like tamales, those kind of things. And quinque is a fermented, it's almost like a fermented corn porridge that, you know, is cooked. And it stays together like a tamale, like the same kind of method. And that I've had at a lot of Ghanaian restaurants, and Ghanaian people out here, they make it, and it's delicious. So you can have that with your food and your soups and things like that. So find different ways, especially traditional ways, to eat organic, non-GMO corn products, because it's very healthful. Just make sure, again, organic, non-GMO, because, again, corn is one of those foods that is heavily hybridized, heavily genetically modified. So even though I would say you don't need to eat corn as like a staple in your diet, it's just something that is another grain that is it has this nutrient potential that, you know, we can't ignore. So, but just be conscious about it, about your purchases with the corn. Millet. Millet is the next grain I have on my list. It's a small whole grain food, a small whole grain, and it's a staple product in many countries. It's a staple in many countries in Africa, Asia. Many different countries have millet as a common food product. It's rich in antioxidants, and the antioxidants in millet have actually been associated with protection against cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, cancer. Millet has also been shown to help decrease the incidence of stomach ulcers. Go figure. I haven't found why that is so, but I've seen a couple studies talking about that, and I was like, it's most likely due to the antioxidants, just because it's helping with the cell not becoming oxidized and not becoming degenerated and allowed to heal, which makes sense. So a cup of millet has about 207 calories, you know, so it's very nutrient dense. But, I mean, it has a little bit of calories, but it's very nutrient dense, so the trade-off is good. It's rich in protein, rich in fiber. It also has cholesterol-lowering abilities because of the fiber, and also is gluten-free, which is another plus. Again, people who are sensitive to gluten, wheat, can absolutely eat millet, unless you have an allergy to millet, which most people don't have. Millet is another one of those quick-to-cook, quick-to-brown grains, so it's great for stir-frying in a pan or in a pot. And it can be mixed with vegetables and spices and beans, you know, to make pilafs or yummy stir fries. And, again, it takes on the flavors pretty nice and adds a nice earthy, nutty flavor to the dish. So I would say absolutely try millet. It's delicious and a healthful grain as well. Now, rice. Got to talk about rice since I'm talking about grains, because rice is huge in African dishes, African-American, Africans in Africa, Africans all over the diaspora, we eat rice. We do rice, okay? And rice absolutely has nutritional benefits to it. Brown rice is only, you know, the start of the rices that we have available to us. I'm only going to talk about a few, but brown rice is one of them. Brown rice is only processed to remove the husk. So just like that initial, that grassy husk, that's taken off, and then you're left with the brown rice. But it still has the intact bran and the germ. So all that's intact, and then it keeps the oils intact. It keeps the nutrients intact. Brown rice actually provides nutrients like vitamin E because it keeps its bran and germ. It has a host of B vitamins. It's rich in iron, magnesium, phosphorus, and that's just to name a few of the many nutrients that are in rice. Vitamin E is especially abundant in the germ of the rice, and this vitamin, again, plays a very important role as an antioxidant, and it can help the cells in our body stay protected from free radicals that cause cell damage and aging. Brown rice also consists of a really good deal of fiber, more than white rice, of course, because it's keeping its fibrous bran and germ, which make brown rice better for digestion. It's better for blood sugar because, again, when you remove the germ, you remove the fiber from the rice, it leaves that that simple sugar, that simple carbohydrate endosperm that spikes the blood sugar when you just eat it by itself. When you eat it with the fiber, it doesn't spike the blood sugar the same way. And this also helps the fiber helps with elimination as well. Black rice is another great one. Just like brown rice, the bran and the germ of the black rice are still intact. The unique aspect of black rice, though, is that it has a higher amount of antioxidants in the form of anthocyanidins. And I've mentioned in other shows, anthocyanidins are those pigment molecule antioxidants that create purples and blacks in plant foods. So blackberries have anthocyanidins. Anything you see, blueberries, all those things that are blue, black, they have antioxidants in them. And black rice has a great deal of those in the bran of it. And what that does is it allows this rice to be a very antioxidant food that can help protect against inflammation. And there's actually a study that I read in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, and it found that black rice contains 6 times the amount of antioxidants of brown and white rice. So black rice is a superior rice that you can use. But just remember, the cooking will be different than with white rice, so just take that into consideration. Wild rice is another rice product that I love. It's not related to the rice that I was just mentioning, like the black and the brown rice. It's not the same. It's actually like a distant cousin of that rice, so it's not too far away, but it is the same. I mean, it is a type of rice. Ancient societies have consumed wild rice for hundreds of years. And wild rice is known for its nutty flavor and its high protein content. And I actually love the way that wild rice tastes, even better than other rices. It can provide you with almost 4 grams of protein per serving. And additionally, wild rice can provide you with important minerals like potassium, phosphorus, and it's chock full of B vitamins like most other grains, which helps support healthy blood pressure and metabolism. Red rice is also a type of like the rice, like a black rice or a brown rice. And you can find it labeled under the name cargo rice usually, or ruby red rice, or Bhutanese rice. It's similar to black rice. It's just red. It's more of a red color. And it still has a little bit of anthocyanins in it, but it doesn't have as much as the black rice, again, because, you know, the darker the berry, you know, the more antioxidants it'll have, right? So that's – but just a little bit less. I wouldn't say that red rice is completely, you know, not as helpful as black rice, but just know that the darker the grain, the more antioxidants it has in its hull. Remember that all of your whole grain rice will cook much slower than instant or white rice. So just take the time into consideration when preparing your meals. the rule for cooking these whole grain rice are usually to a cup of the whole grain rice, you need 2 to 3 cups of water for cooking. So just make sure that you make those necessary adjustments when transitioning. I only have about 3 more grains to talk about. I know we're going over time, but I want to get all these grains in before I get off. The next grain I want to talk about is oats. And if you have any questions or comments, you can always call in, press number one, or you can also email me or go to my website and contact me if you have any questions about any of this. Let's see. Oats. Okay. So oats are loaded in dietary fiber as well, containing more than any other grain. Oats are a powerhouse for fiber. And this special fiber that is in oats is called beta-glucan, which has a wide range of healthy cholesterol-lowering and cardiovascular nourishing properties. What's more is 1 cup of oats contains 16.5 grams of fiber, which is roughly half of a person's recommended daily intake of fiber, which is awesome. Oats also contain an array of minerals like manganese, selenium, phosphorus, fiber, magnesium, zinc, just an abundance of different nutrients. And oats are also rich in carotenoids like vitamin E, beta carotenes, pretty much the different carotenoids, flavonoids. It also has like its special class of polyphenols that are only in oats. And all of those things work together with making oats like very anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, and regulatory to the digestive system and the elimination system. So oats are excellent. I love them. They also have been used by our ancestors. If you look at, I know I've seen pictures of oats in Kemetic pictures, like pictures of the inside of the temples and things. You can see our ancestors actually harvesting whatever oats that they had, whatever variety that they had back in that time. Amaranth is one of my favorite grains as well. It's actually one of the world's oldest grains. Amaranth is extremely versatile. It can be used in the place of rice also. Amaranth is gluten-free, and it's high in protein. It has an abundance of amino acids that help us to nourish the brain and the nervous system, providing amino acids like lysine, cysteine, methionine. And these amino acids actually aren't found as in high concentrations in other grains as it is in amaranth. A single serving of amaranth is up to 7% of vitamin C that we need. It has about 42% of the iron that we need and 16% of the calcium that we need for the whole day. So, adding amaranth to the diet can really help to boost your nutrition. It's an extremely nutrient-rich grain. Cook amaranth in vegetable stock. You can cook it in water, in soups. You can use it as a flour in breads and other baked goods. You can use it in cereals as well. It has a nutty kind of a malty taste to it, which makes it a perfect choice for breakfast. When you add it to, like, nuts or dried fruit and milks, it kind of just adds that nice flavor in combination with the sweet. It's great. So definitely add amaranth into your diet because it's almost like a little multivitamin in a dish that you're eating. Let's see, barley. I want to talk about barley. It's very rich and bulky grain that's originally from Ethiopia and Southwest Asia. It's very nutrient-dense, high in fiber, B vitamins. It's high in iron, copper, manganese, and selenium. And this blend of nutrients in barley has actually been linked to it having an ability to increase the immune system response. And it has been shown to be more efficient, to help the body be more efficient in its metabolism and its energy usage. Barley is also low in calories. It's not a really starchy grain, so it's good for people that are trying to stay away from starchy products like pasta and rice. before cooking, always make sure you rinse barley, though. The same way with the whole grain rice, if you're going to cook barley, make sure you use, you know, 3 cups of water for every cup of barley. You can use the flour for barley to make breads, muffins, cookies. You can use the whole grains to stir fry it with vegetables, blend it with soups and stews. You can even make a tea out of barley grains, the whole barley grains, raw or roasted. Roasted barley tea is actually really delicious, and you can add a natural sweetener to it like maple syrup or honey or stevia, and it's an excellent-tasting, nutrient-dense, cold-weather drink that you can just sip on, and it'll just kind of give you energy, and it'll just, like, warm you up, and you'll feel all those nutrients going into you. It's very good. Let's see. Quinoa. Quinoa is found traditionally in the Andes Mountains, like in Bolivia, Chile, Peru. And quinoa means mother grain in the indigenous language of the Inca. So quinoa is, you know, that speaks to what quinoa is. Like, it's basically a complete grain. They call it a complete protein grain, meaning that it contains all 9 of the essential amino acids that you need in order to create the protein that you need in your body, which have been shown to help it with boosting immunity, helping with improving muscle quality and muscle tone. You know, so those of you who are worried about being vegan or vegetarian while being an active athlete, you know, building muscle and things like that, brothers, if you're looking for something to keep your muscles right, then quinoa is a really good choice for that, because it really it's a complete protein. It's great for post-workout. You can add it to soups. You can add it to, like, a post-workout cereal. You can make granola out of it, you know, smoothies, whatever you need to do. It's a great whole food. And it also is a great source of B vitamins, again, which help with your metabolism, would help with your energy. So it's great for people who are even if you're not active, it'll help with your energy. But if you're a very active person, it'll help with just replenishing you and making sure that you have all the nutrients you need and protein. Quinoa provides 20% of the iron and phosphorus that you require every day, along with 9% of the potassium, 2% of the calcium, 2% of the calcium, and then it has, of course, an array of trace minerals in it. Again, quinoa is another versatile and delicious grain. It can easily be a substitute for rice. That's actually one of the first rice substitutes that I tried, and I love it. It's very quick to cook for those of you who are not feeling the long cooking time for some of the whole grain rices. Quinoa, even like the harder quinoas, like the black quinoa, the red quinoa, 15 minutes, 20 minutes tops, you know, you're done with cooking your quinoa. And you can serve it with fresh vegetables, cooked vegetables, stir-fry, whatever you want. You can use it in cold salads. You can do so much stuff with quinoa. Definitely get up on that grain. And it's not starchy. For those of you who, especially if you're diabetic or people who can't eat really starchy grains, quinoa is excellent for you because, again, those people need high protein. They need less starch, something that won't spike the blood sugar, and fiber. Quinoa is an excellent choice. The last grain I want to talk about is another one of my favorites, is buckwheat. Buckwheat groats, in particular, are the whole grains from the buckwheat. And buckwheat is low in fat. It offers a heaping dose of B vitamins, antioxidants. It actually has this antioxidant carotenoid called rutin, which is actually the pigment, or it's actually a vitamin that your eyes need, and it actually stores rutin in your eyes behind your pupil, in your macula. And when that starts to lose that nutrient, when your eyes start to lose the rutin that it needs for the macula, you can start getting things like macular degeneration. You can start getting vision problems. So eating foods rich in carotenoids like rutin and, you know, other antioxidants, which are in buckwheat, is great for the vision. And buckwheat also contains antioxidants that have an affinity for the nervous system and the veins, which will help with people that have varicose veins, people that have hemorrhoids, you know, people that have an irritated cardiovascular system and nervous system. buckwheat is great for that. It also contains a great array of vitamins, minerals, B vitamins, manganese, magnesium, phosphorus, zinc, iron. It also contains essential amino acids, making and buckwheat is another one of those grains that makes a complete protein. So again, helps with muscle building, helps with replenishing energy and metabolism. So add cooked or sprouted buckwheat to salads. Use it as a side dish, or add fruit to it. Add nuts and seeds to it as an all. You can add like some spices and sweetener to it for a healthy oatmeal alternative. Buckwheat is extremely, extremely versatile. So those were all the grains. Now, a quick note, you can get most of these grains, like I said, at health food stores that have a good variety of different, nuts, seeds, and things you can purchase, especially if they have a bulk section. Or if all else fails, you can always look online and see where you can order those grains for your family. Another thing, you can also sprout and ferment these grains. Sprouting and fermenting these grains causes better assimilation of the nutrients. It opens them up so that it opens up the cell wall, and it gets rid of enzyme inhibitors and nutrient inhibitors that can make it a little bit more difficult for the body to break it down and get to those nutrients. And it also helps with digestion. So make sure that you're sprouting or at least soaking your grains before you cook them, or using sprouted grains in your foods. You can even dry sprouted grains and then ground them into flour, and then you can have your sprouted flours. You can also grow some of these grains into grasses. So let's say that you sprout your wheat berries, you sprout your kamut berries or whatever. You can actually make your wheat grasses out of these different wheats, especially if you are allergic to wheat. The wheat that most people use for wheatgrass, you can use kamut and make kamut grass. You can make barley grass. You know, those are some of the alternative grasses that you can use and juice those instead of the wheat. So those were just some notes that I wanted to put out there since I went over those different grains and for people that need the alternatives. So with that being said, that's pretty much all I have for you. I hope that was informative. I hope that everybody took notes. If you weren't able to take notes, you can always go back to the archive. And if you have any questions, you can always email me at askdradiro@gmail.com. Or you can look me up on Facebook, Afivia Adiro, ask me questions. Or you can go to my website, askdradiro.weebly.com. For any questions or concerns. So that's pretty much all I have for you today. So, yeah.
Yeah, awesome show once again. This awesome show. Like Sis said, for those of you who did miss any of the important information she gave, you can always go back into our archive and check it out. Next week, remember to be here on time, 10 and Pat, 3 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Check out our website, dynastynetwork.net. And sis, enjoy your weekend. Everyone out there,
right.
Do the same.
All right.
Peace, fam.
Peace.